podcast. My name is Liz Jansen and my guest is Lois Price. Lois began her motorcycle adventures in 2003 when she worked at the BBC and was looking for more adventure. Since then, she's traveled throughout the Americas. She's traveled in Africa and most recently in Iran by herself on her motorcycle. She's the author of two books, Lois on the Loose and Red Tape and White Knuckles. We're here today to talk about why she does it, where she's been, and what advice she has for anybody that's thinking of trying out some of these adventures for themselves. So welcome, Lois. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure. So Lois, what compels you? When you first started, you were looking for adventure and you haven't stopped. They keep escalating. What compels you to do it?
Well, I think it's just a break from the old routine. You know, I'd worked since I'd left school, basically, and I'd reached the grand old age of 29 and felt like I needed the urge, you know, had the urge to hit the road. And I was just, you know, just had a boring job, like many people in this world, and rode a motorcycle, and I put the two things together and came up with the idea. And then, of course, once you've done it, the bug doesn't go away, you know, it just gets worse.
It doesn't. And a lot of people have a boring job and they don't like it, but they don't do anything about it.
Well, I suggest that they do.
Yeah. How do you decide where you're going to go?
Well, my first trip, I didn't really have any strong feelings about it. I just wanted to go, you know, around the world in the loosest sense. And I realized that I probably couldn't really afford to do a whole around the world trip. So I chose the Americas because I love the States. I love the USA and I'd always wanted to travel down the West Coast. And then I thought, well, I'll just keep going, really, and go into Mexico, Latin America. And I looked at the map, and it looked like a, you know, decent-sized landmass to do from the top to bottom. You know, so it took me 10 months.
Decent size, for sure.
And I realised it'd be very varied. That journey takes you through all different types of geography and terrain. So you get mountains and desert and beautiful coastlines and everything you can imagine. So it was wonderful, especially a good route for a first trip as well.
It's a pretty impressive undertaking for a first trip. Lots of diversity. But did you have any idea what you were getting into?
Not really, but I was willing to give it a whirl and just see how it went along. And I started in the USA on purpose because I knew that would be easy, obviously English speaking and able to get parts for my bike if I needed or bits. You know, I'd get anything in the States, obviously. And that would ease me into life on the road. And then once I got used to that after, you know, two or three months in the States, I would go into Mexico and then obviously that would become a little bit more complicated. But by that time, I would be used to what it's like to travel every day on a motorcycle. Because for all I knew, I might not even like it, you know. But obviously, I did.
Obviously, you did. What compels you to go alone?
Well, that was kind of important to me, particularly in the first trip. I just wanted, like I said, I'd worked since I left school. And I had a great life in London, no complaints, you know, good job, nice home, lots of friends and boyfriend and everything. But I just felt I wasn't really being... Life wasn't really testing me, you know. I wanted to sort of throw myself out in the world and live on my wits and just see if that was possible, how I would get on. I was intrigued as to how I would get on. And so I felt that by travelling alone, it would be more of a challenge. Because obviously if you travel with a companion, you've always got each other to sound off ideas and to help you out and moan at each other about everything. You know, if you're on your own, it's harder, but it's definitely more rewarding. And also you get a more raw experience. I think you get to meet more people. You're more vulnerable, but people respond positively to that. And you have a very unique experience.
Yeah. And there weren't, you know, there seems to be a lot more people now, especially women, traveling by themselves, like going around the world or doing that. I don't think 10 years ago when you were doing that, there weren't a lot of other people, or especially women, young women, doing it, were there?
No, not at all. I knew of two women that had done solo motorcycle travel. And I got in touch with them before I left, and they were great. One of them is Tiffany Coates, who's a friend of mine now. Mm-hmm. And another woman called Sarah, I can't remember her name now, but she had done the trip through the Americas. And they were both really, really helpful. But yeah, there's been an explosion in the last 10 years. So yeah.
And Tiffany now, I think, is in Madagascar, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, yeah.
I just saw a picture of her in the rainy season. So
yeah, covered in mud.
Yeah. How do you begin to plan for a trip like this?
Well, there's a danger of too much planning, which can actually put you off going. So there is an element of having to stop at a certain point, and sort of you can only plan so much. So, you know, plan your route, prepare your bike, get enough money together, have your, you know, your injection for your travel jabs and all that kind of thing. But really, just do all of those sensible things, but don't do much more than that, because I think you can overplan, and then you, the whole point of these trips is that you want them to happen to you.
Right.
So you have to allow for a certain amount of flexibility and impulsive behaviour, which is what makes them fun.
Isn't that right? And the serendipity that's bound
exactly.
to happen.
Exactly, yeah.
One of the things that I remember from reading Lois on the Loose was, you know, you do get yourself into some situations, especially, I imagine, on your first trip. As you said, you know, you're getting to know the routine and visas and crossing borders and all that kind of thing. And you said something to the effect of, you know, you'd get yourself into some of these situations and wonder, how am I ever going to get through it? And then you'd say, well, would I rather be here or would I rather be in my office cubicle at the BBC?
Exactly, and you always answer that you'd rather be here. So you never wish you were back in your job.
No, but there's so many people, and you know we touched on this before, that are reluctant to push through their comfort zone. What can you say
about
that?
The hard part is not motorcycling or speaking funny languages or crossing borders or eating strange food or any of those things. The hard part is making that leap to leave the things behind, to leave your job or your family or your home or whatever it might be. Once you've done that, everything else is easy. And the thing is, though, you can always come back to those things. They don't go away forever.
No, they don't. But you're out there and you're testing yourself, for sure.
Mm.
You did an article on minimalism.
Mm.
And, you know, talking about how it's a little different when you're on the road versus when you are at home.
Totally. I'm not a minimalist at all. My place is full of clutter. I love clutter. But when you're on the road, you can't be a clutter. And I actually relish the minimalism of life on the road because it does make it simpler. So I think the less... I don't like gadgets. I mean, even in life at home, I don't really enjoy kind of having gadgets and stuff. So I think keep it simple. There's less stuff to break, less stuff to get lost, less stuff to get nicked or whatever. You know, so it really makes life easier. A travelling light is definitely the best advice you can give someone, but nobody takes any notice of it until they've done a trip and realised halfway through that they've got too much stuff, which is exactly what I did. Had a big clear out once I got to Mexico, you know.
Yeah, because...
Go ahead. I was just saying, everybody starts off with too much stuff, and the more trips you do, the less stuff you bring. It's an absolute, like, golden rule.
Yeah. So how has your travel evolved? From, you know, from where, when you first started, you know, what lessons have you learned? How do you approach it now differently than you did before?
The main lesson I've learned really is that you don't really need to worry about everything because everything does genuinely work out in the end. So you just need to stay really calm and just, you know, just don't worry, you know. It's just that's the biggest thing for me, probably the best thing that I've learned from it. And then you can apply that to every aspect of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
good point. Well, you're traveling in countries where, you know, I don't know how many languages you speak, but it's certainly not every one for every country that you've been in.
No, I'm terrible at languages.
You know, so you know, that would put people off right there, right? How are you going to
make yourself... Yeah, the thing is, it's a terrible thing, unfortunately, us British people, you know, it's a shameful truth, but we don't really do very well at languages in the way that other Europeans do. So because English has always been such a dominant language in the world, that you do find people in the remotest village in Angola or in the mountains of Iran or whatever, someone will speak English, you know, so you can always get by. And even if they don't, you just manage by pointing and drawing pictures and making noises and, you know, you always get by. I mean, it can be frustrating, obviously. Because, in an ideal world, it would be nice to have really proper, meaningful conversations with people that you meet, and that isn't always possible.
Sure.
So that is a shame. But, I mean, you know, if you want to travel the world, there's no way you're going to be able to learn every language in the world. So you just have to accept that, I think. And being an English speaker is probably about the best, you know, the best language you can speak, because there is always someone.
Sure. What do you say, you know, to people who ask you about how do you stay safe, or, you know, because they'd be worried about their own personal security, especially when you don't speak the language or know the culture or know what to do or know how they're going to treat women.
Yeah.
Or a motorcycle rider.
I've never had any sort of serious incidents. I've had a bit of, you know, hassle or harassment, but that's just like you'd get anywhere, really. I've never felt like it's, well, on that first trip through South America, Central and South America, I never felt my personal safety was under threat. But you do modify your behaviour, maybe in a way you wouldn't at home. You don't go out, you know, getting drunk and staggering home to your hotel at 3 a.m, you know, singing or whatever. So you do make, you know, you tend to be in after dark, whatever, and just act sensibly. But what happens really is that when you travel, your instincts get honed incredibly well, and it's something you really notice after a couple of weeks. You really know if a situation or a person is okay or not, and if you trust your instincts, then that's really the best thing you can do, because they're always right. But they get really kind of super honed on the road.
Yeah, good point. And as you go and as you travel through more countries, I guess that gets, you know, that gets more and more.
Absolutely. And you know, you can just tell, you just know if somebody's acting a bit weird, or if a town is a bit, you feel a bit uneasy, or a certain street, or you go and check in a hotel and the guy behind the counter is a bit funny. You just know.
Yeah.
And you have to listen to that. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. People, even here in North America, you know, they think about those things, and they wonder when they're traveling themselves, you know, within the US or within Canada, about what about yourself? You know, how do you keep yourself safe, and what's going to happen, you know?
And see, there isn't much of a threat, really. I mean, most people are friendly and nice. Yeah. Most people don't want to hurt another human being.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so the danger is actually very, very small. I would say that men are maybe more at risk in a way if they're kind of out on the town. You know, I know people that have had their drinks spiked and money stolen and robbed, and you know, but they tend to be men. which, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it's safer to be a woman or a man, really. It all depends on your own behaviour. It depends on how you respond to people. That's really the most sure thing. If you go in there smiling and friendly and polite, but obviously firm, you know, you don't expose yourself to someone who's, you know, vulnerable, people will react to you in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a lot to do with it, I think. But on the whole, people just want to help you.
And yeah. I expect that you are a novelty when, you know, a lot of these places where you go, it's like, what's this? You know,
Everyone wants to know you. They're all over it, you know, like, who are you, where are you from? You know, just full of questions.
Yeah.
So it's very rare for that to then turn into an unpleasant experience.
So you've touched lives around the world.
Well, I hope so.
Well, I'm sure you have. I'm sure they've touched you, but I'm sure you've touched them too with you know, who you are and how you interact with them. What impression do you think you leave them with?
What is your wish? Hopefully I leave them with the impression that British people are friendly, because that's important for me, that people think that, and that they think that motorcyclists are friendly, because this, I might be in a little village or something, I might be the only British person they ever meet, or the only motorcyclist they see. And so it's really important to me to make that one fleeting impression, to make it a good impression.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one element. But hopefully a lot of the, you know, the other impression that I hope I leave is that women are capable of doing this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the countries I travel through, very traditional cultures where women just tend to get married and have children. They may not even have careers or jobs or anything. So, and a lot of the surprise is like, oh, a woman riding a motorcycle. You know, normally people like it. They're excited by it and they're curious, but it's unusual. So hopefully I'll leave a little memory of like, oh, well, she could do it. So maybe I could too, you know.
Yeah. Maybe I could try something else that I've wanted
something.
To
do. Yeah, I don't mean you have to go ride a motorcycle, but just trying something that might not be, you know, maybe the norm within your culture.
Do people know you're British other than you tell them? I mean, do they differentiate between British, American, Canadian? How do they know the difference? We're all, you know, white people speaking English.
That's a very good question, actually, because when I rode through the Americas, it was 2003, and the Iraq War, and we can't keep up with all those wars. It was the War on Terror, as they called it. It just started, and there was lots of anti-American graffiti and sentiment, and anti-Bush sentiment. So, and because it's in the Americas, they would assume that most white people down there were American. So I actually put a British flag on my bike to make sure that they realised that I wasn't American. So, and obviously I would tell people when I talked to them. But then in Iran, they were, you know, they were always asking where I was from. But, you know, a lot of the time the West is lumped in together.
Right,
All one and the same. And I'm sure as a Canadian, you are sick to death of being taken for an American when you travel.
They don't know the difference, right? Sometimes when you get into some of these countries, they don't know the difference.
No,
right?
They don't. And American
But they do know the difference. They do know there's a difference between a Canadian and an American, but they just can't, tell.
American culture is so pervasive all around the world that I think it sometimes is good to point out that you're not an American, because it can be a disadvantage to be taken for an American, unfortunately, which is a shame, because I love America and all American people. So
yeah, me too. Got lots of friends there.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I'm here right now. I'm in Los Angeles.
Yes, you are. Yeah, that's great. So what advice do you have? People, you know, they must ask you too, how do you get started? I mean, you just jumped in with both feet right off the bat. I don't know how much, you didn't have a lot of experience before.
No, I haven't really been riding long. I've only been riding a year and I haven't really ridden it anywhere. I mean, it really, you know, it's the main thing to remember. And this is what, you know, I said, I spoke to a woman before who had done some riding. She said it's so much easier than you think it will be, and that is the crucial thing. Her words really stuck with me, and that's what I always tell people. It sounds like it would be really hard, difficult, scary, blah blah blah. It isn't. It's really easy. In fact, it's easier than like living your normal life at home, because it's so simple. Because all you've got to do is get up, ride, eat, sleep, ride, eat. You know, obviously stuff happens to you along the way, but because you don't have anything else to deal with, that's all you have to do is just deal with that stuff. So it's an incredibly liberating way to live, actually. So I would say don't be, bogged down by the feeling that you need to, you know, speak loads of languages and be an amazing mechanic or a great rider or have loads of money. You don't really need any of those things. You just need to be just an open-minded, compassionate human being, and that will really get you through every situation.
So you mentioned money. One of the questions that people ask is, you know, how do I do something like this, and how do I balance that with, working, making a living, and going out on adventure?
Well, that is probably more of a risk than anything else. You know, it's like I was saying, the giving up of your security. I mean, I did give up my job at the BBC, and I had no job to go back to. And I was sort of hoping that inspiration would hit on the road, you know, and it did. So that was like, I think those risks are worth taking. But some people, I know people that have done massive trips for 10 years, that have done, you know, 1 to 2 month trips or whatever. Some people get a leave of absence from their job. Some people just save up money and hope they'll get another job when they get home. Some people work along the way, which I've never done, because my whole ethos is getting away from work.
Right.
But, you know, there's loads of different ways of doing it. You have to be imaginative. And obviously people that own property often rent their property out while they're away, and that brings in maybe a little bit of money over the mortgage to pay for their life on the road. Because obviously life on the road is actually a lot cheaper than life at home.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it doesn't need to cost you a lot of money. You don't need a big expensive motorbike. You don't need to spend, you know, £20,000 on a huge brand new BMW. You just need to buy a good quality, you know, small Japanese trail bike that isn't got too many miles in it for a few thousand dollars. And that's it, really. You just, if you're a rider anyway, you've got all the gear you need. You could just go, you know.
Yeah.
So people get caught up, I think, in thinking they need to buy a lot of stuff.
Right.
And you don't really. And you can always get what you need on the road anyway, so.
Well, and you can't carry that much on a small bike
anyways. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's actually quite good to limit yourself.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, do you ever look back on your days at the BBC and wonder if that's the same person? Like,
well, I always knew that this person was bubbling under inside me. Yeah, I knew from the minute I started working there that it wasn't my natural environment.
I guess not. What a difference. But it must feel so so rewarding, or I don't know, satisfying to be following, you know, what it is that you want to do.
Well, it was a great feeling to hit the road and, you know, be free from all that. But it wasn't like I'd set out with this sort of big, you know, 5-10 year plan to do this and write books. And, you know, I had no idea what I was going to do when I came home. No idea at all.
But it's
I didn't
all
know when I was going to come home. I didn't know, you know.
Yeah.
So it was, I just sort of, you know, allowed, like things to happen and went with the flow, and it all worked out. So, you know,
it's worked out beautifully.
Yeah, like I said.
So what's next for you?
Well, I'm hopefully planning to write a book about my recent trip around Iran, and I'm hoping to go back there again. So that'll take me a little bit of time. My last two books have taken me about a year to write.
Well, that's so pretty good.
Not bad, but I'll be at home for a while, which is good, because I've been away a lot over the last few years, so I'm quite happy to sort of be at home writing away.
Yeah. Oh, we look forward to reading about that, for sure.
Ah, oh, thank you.
Any final words of wisdom?
Oh, words of wisdom. I mean, really, I would just say, just have a go, you know, that because nothing bad can come of having a go. So if you do have the urge, don't feel pressured to do the big thing or to, you know, just do it at your own pace. That's the other important thing, you know, because for some people, just riding a bike is a big deal. You know, some people just going, you know, maybe just across the border to Mexico or something, just do that, do a little trip and see how you feel. And before you know it, you'll be, you know, halfway to Argentina.
That's great. Great words to part with. Thank you very much, Lois.
No, thanks, Liz. It's been great talking to you.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye.